This is Morning Edition on NHPR. I'm Rick Ganley, and this is the New Hampshire News Recap. In fact, it's our final news recap of 2025. So we're talking about the top stories from not just this week, but from the entire year. Okay, so lots to cover. Let's get into it. Joining us first is NHPR's senior political reporter, Josh Rogers. Good morning, Josh.
Good morning, Rick.
It's certainly been a busy year for your beat with Donald Trump back in the White House and a new governor here in New Hampshire, Kelly Ayotte. Let's talk a bit about Ayotte's first year in the corner office. What's stood out for you?
Well, you recall that Governor Ayotte ran on the promise of keeping New Hampshire on the Sununu path. We'd obviously had 8 years of Chris Sununu, and in some ways she did so, certainly on the policy front. She held the line on taxes, conservative but not all in on social policies that some members of her party back. So she was similar to Chris Sununu in that regard, but such a different political style, far more focused, many more stated discrete goals on that front. Kelly Ayotte has delivered largely. Bail changes, she got that, stiffening policies aimed at curbing illegal immigration, a ban on cell phones in schools. She said she wanted those things, and they all happened. You could point to school choice as an interesting matter. She wanted an expansion of the Education Freedom Accounts program, but what she ended up with went a lot farther than what she proposed, but it's certainly something that a lot of Republicans are excited about. And you could also point to changes at the YDC settlement fund that she pushed for, giving her control over the fund's administration and the attorney general total say over any settlements. That's going to be a big ongoing story for some time. But I think that in total, you can see from Governor Ayotte's first year in office that, she can be quite assertive when she wants to get what she wants.
Now, you mentioned the YDC settlements. A major task for Ayotte this year was working with the legislature to finalize the next state budget. How did that process this year go? How did the state budget go in the legislature?
I think it was more testy than expected. There were fights over revenue estimates between the governor and the House and Senate. And then there was a standoff late in the process between the governor and the state Senate over millions of dollars that she wanted to spend. And the state is spending basically to boost the pension of some first responders who are really a key constituency for Ayotte. And for a time, it looked like that fight might sink the budget or lead to a veto. A deal did emerge. And, sometimes it is when there is one party in control that things get more fractious. But there were definitely hard feelings that came out of this budget process. And I think, as an example, that Governor Ayotte doesn't always operate with a heck of a lot of finesse when it comes to dealing with policymakers in Concord, including Republicans. But Ayotte, again, has shown she's willing to get into it with top members of her own party if she feels she's in the right, at least in Concord. And I think she's been more circumspect when it comes to dealing with the Trump administration.
Well, we did see several cuts to federal funding this year under the Trump administration. What kind of effect did that have here locally at the State House?
Well, there were clawbacks of public health money and some education money and, other changes coming out of Washington, some that held, others that ended up being reversed or being held in abeyance. I think you could say that Ayotte's tried to avoid public confrontations with the Trump administration. It's a tack that you can see from some other Republican governors. She's not joined lawsuits filed by counterparts in other states, trying to overturn some actions of the Trump administration. She said that she's chosen to work back channels and that has served the state well. Hard to really know, but uncertainty at the federal level has certainly added to fiscal strains in Concord. State revenues have not been coming in to targets set by the legislature as of yet. People keep on saying in year two of the budget is going to get better. And, the state budget did call for $50 million worth of savings to be found by agency heads in the back of the budget, essentially trimming here and there to come up with $50 million. Some of that's going on now. Policymakers and Ayotte are certainly hoping that the state economy and revenues recover, but managing budgets is a big part, or at least often a really big part, of being governor of New Hampshire. Chris Sununu didn't have to do as much of that as governors traditionally do due to federal money and general economic circumstances. Kelly Ayotte's facing a different set of circumstances, and year two of her administration may test her ability to really manage the budget process within state agencies.
And NHPR's Josh Rogers. Josh, thank you.
You're welcome.
And thanks for sharing your reporting this morning and joining us for so many other early mornings over the year.
Anytime, right?
And we'll do it again next year, I'm sure.
Yes.
Joining us now is Anne-Marie Timmons, senior reporter covering youth and education for NHPR. Good morning, Anne-Marie.
Good morning, Rick.
We were just speaking with Josh about cuts to federal funding and how that affected the state budget process. What kind of impact did you see those cuts have on schools here in New Hampshire?
Well, one cut late last year had an immediate impact on New Hampshire students who are either low income or the first in their family to go to college. The Trump administration eliminated funding for part of a program called TRIO that put school counselors in about 30 schools across the state to help them with career planning and applying for college. The Trump administration cut that funding because it included an equity initiative. Now, that initiative was in there because the first Trump administration had required it when this group had applied for this multi-year grant several years ago. And there's one other change we're waiting to see how that plays out. The Trump administration's move to dismantle the U.S. Department of Federal Education could have impacts for special ed funding in the state. We don't really know what those will look like yet, so that's one I'm watching.
Now, we saw budget crises within the state's education system at all levels this year, and Marie, from grade school to universities. How are institutions dealing with that shortfall in funding?
What I have focused on is the legislature's $35 million cut to our state's colleges like UNH, Keene State. And the loss of that money and federal funding has led to declining enrollment and tuition increases, as well as staffing cuts and restructuring. So, for example, right now, the president of Plymouth State College is also the interim president of Keene State College. That's interim, but we'll see how that turns out when his appointment ends in June, whether he stays on or not.
Well, New Hampshire expanded its school voucher program this year as well. How did those changes affect students and parents? What do we know about the expansion and how it's been going so far?
Right. So this year, the legislature opened that Education Freedom Account program to all families, regardless of the income. And what we saw was that really nearly doubled the enrollment to about 10,000 students. Now, Republicans describe this program as important for school choice. Opponents argue that the approximately $4,000 payment is essentially a tuition break for families already sending their children to private school. When you look at the numbers, they show that a fraction of the new enrollees use this voucher to leave public school, just over 300. So most are already homeschooling their children or sending them to a private school.
Anne-Marie, what stories did you most enjoy working on this year? Is there anything in particular that really brought you joy?
Yes, I think getting into schools and letting kids just have the microphone and talk for themselves. Probably my favorite story was tagging along with this high school senior named Justoni from Manchester as he went from high school grad to UNH and just that transition. He was just a delight to spend time with, and it was fun to see him take that big step.
And I really appreciated how you did follow him, and we got his full story over the course of the year. That was wonderful.
It was great. He even took me to say goodbye to his grandmother, which was sweet.
How many reporters get to do that?
Not many.
NHPR's senior reporter Anne-Marie Timmons, thank you so much.
Thank you, Rick.
And we'll look forward to more of your reporting as we get into the new year. Now let's turn to NHPR's Lau Guzman, who's joining us over Zoom. Hey, Lau, how are you?
Hey, good morning, Rick. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. Lau, you cover Latino and immigrant communities at NHPR. This was certainly a busy year on your beat with the Trump administration bringing an aggressive anti-immigration agenda to the White House. How do you see some of those federal policies playing out here in New Hampshire?
Yeah, I'd say that the biggest thing here in New Hampshire is that they are building out detention infrastructure at a very quick pace. Previously, Stratford County Jail was the only place here in New Hampshire to hold immigration detainees. But we did find out in February that FCI Berlin, which is a federal corrections facility in the North Country, it's being used to hold immigration detainees. And numbers here are kind of tricky to find, but I've heard at least 100 detainees, possibly as many as 500 detainees are being held there. The other thing is they're trying to build out infrastructure at a county level. So the Washington Post did obtain an internal document from ICE that laid out plans to expand their capacity here in New Hampshire in the county jails. So the places they were looking at were Rockingham, Hillsborough, and Merrimack. The Merrimack County Commissioners aren't considering it at the moment. The Rockingham County Commissioners have been discussing it all year, but the final decision is still pending. In June, the Hillsborough County Commissioners cut the hypothetical budget line item that would allow them to start this process to negotiate with ICE over the summer. But it might return next year if there's pressure from ICE, if property taxes increase and ICE wants to use their jail. There's also kind of been a back and forth here between the commissioners, because the Republicans usually argue that the money for holding detainees is a windfall to help them maintain aging county infrastructure and lower property taxes. But the Democrats argue that holding additional detainees is immoral and the extra funds just simply aren't worth it. And the thing about infrastructure, it's not just holding the detainees, but transporting them. We did see a number of peace flights in September that were formerly from Hanscom Field in Massachusetts, and activists did count about 400 people boarding these flights in the month that they did flow out of Pease. And there was some pressure at the Pease Development Authority, but the flights kind of left as mysteriously as they arrived at the end of the month.
What's been the response from local political leaders about that? You know, I'm wondering about, you know, the cooperation with local law enforcement. I'm wondering what political leaders are saying and what the, you know, the community at large is saying.
Yeah, totally. So to talk about this stuff, you kind of have to talk about this idea of local control that we have in New Hampshire. You know, we have a history of having very strong municipal government with things like town meetings and a large volunteer legislature. And immigration enforcement is kind of the opposite of local control in that it is enforced by the different branches of the Department of Homeland Security, which is a federal agency. So it's always interesting to see the interplay between how these like big national trends are interacting with what's going on at the local level. I think one of the big things that we saw this year was the rapid signing of something called the 287G agreement, which is an agreement between ICE and local law enforcement that allows the local law enforcement to take over some duties from the feds. So far, we have about 12 of them, including the state police. And the interesting thing here was that they were approved by ICE often days after law enforcement signed, and these had strong support from Governor Ayotte. She also supported a new bill called the so-called Sanctuary City Policy, and we did see increased scrutiny on Hanover and Lebanon from both the federal government and the state legislature for policies that they had in place. This sanctuary bill that I was talking about, they require these two municipalities to change their ordinances or lose a decent chunk of state money. The legislature also passed a new law that would invalidate a certain class of licenses, which were primarily issued to undocumented drivers from Connecticut and Delaware.
You cover Latino and immigrant communities right here in New Hampshire. What have you been hearing from those particular communities?
There's a lot of fear, a lot of uncertainty. People are just kind of scared to go out. People are afraid to maybe go to church or drop their kids off at school. We've been seeing lots of fear of like regular police because it's never clear if a particular action is, you know, local police or if it's ICE. So we've seen that going on. But in the middle of that, I think there's also like a good deal of celebration. I mean, life goes on, you know, kids still grow up, people graduate, they do, you know, their religious holidays and life moves on. So a lot of uncertainty and also a lot of hope, I'd say.
Well, now thinking about that, what was the most joyful story that you covered this year? Was there something that stands out for you?
Yeah, I covered a graduation. I don't know if you know this about me, but I love graduations. Immigrant and Latino communities, we just really love an occasion to like dress up and like wear pretty clothes. And graduations are kind of like an excuse, I think, because, I don't know, it's like an achievement. It's a big deal. I got to hang out with a group of primarily women. There was one guy who were getting their license to run their own at-home childcare. And it was just really nice to like meet their kids and their families. And, you know, they've been studying for this for a long time. And it's just like really nice, I don't know, to get to like share a special day with somebody. Especially because we do know that childcare is kind of a high need career here in New Hampshire. So it was nice to like chat with these immigrant women and like hear about their stories coming to the United States and the love and care that they have for the kids that they work with every day. It was just like a fabulous time.
And HPR's Lau Guzman, thank you so much for taking the time and happy holidays and happy new year.
Thanks to you too, Rick.
By the way, you can find more of our reporters' work, of course, and all the stories we talked about this morning, as always, at nhpr.org. Now, we're going to take the next 2 weeks off with the recap, but we'll be back in the new year with more top headlines, as always. I'm Rick Ganley. This is NHPR. Happy New Year.